You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 43. Am I right here? It's been so long.
Yes.
Flying Delver returns of
In Response,
a legacy podcast.
I'm Philipp Klein.
I am Flying Delver.
AKA Daniel.
AKA Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we're talking about Legacy.
Most of the time.
So yeah, all this is long time no see.
Oh, it's no, here actually.
Oh, yeah, for sure, no here, but, oh, fuck, it feels good to be here again. I missed you two guys so much. I missed you so much that I already tweeted we sit here for about 4 hours now and just talking shit all the time and haven't recorded a single sentence until now, but finally Peter has taken up the courage to just start the timer and basically duress me into starting the podcast.
Yeah, almost feels like a pressure situation, but I think Philip can handle this.
Yeah, he won't grief us today.
No.
That's true. My force of will is really strong.
We decided to celebrate a little bit because we haven't seen each other for so long. And we're sitting here with some wine. Beverages. Some nice beverages. We have wine and gin tonic as of now.
So my wine is already gone, but...
Yeah, we had wine at least, okay. And it's time to record again, yeah? Absolutely. I'm back in Europe. I had the feeling that, well, jet lag hit me hard, but... So far, there are no signs, unless maybe the alcoholic consumption.
I hope so.
No, I think, yeah... Actually, it was fine.
So let's taste the gin tonic.
Oh, yeah. Philip tastes it. I already had a sip.
And while Philip tastes it, we can thank our patrons for supporting our channel, which are Gino and Matt Duncan. Thank you very much.
We appreciate it.
So as much as the gin tonic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck. It's great. So this podcast is certainly not PG rated.
Not this time.
So I think we will start off with some personal stuff, talking about what happened since the last episode, which is basically like, I wanted to say 6 months, but actually only 6 weeks ago. So Daniel...
Only, quote unquote.
Only fans, yeah. So Daniel, you were in America, as we call it, and what happened there?
Well, a lot of stuff. It was a whole different world that I experienced. I think we have a lot of American listeners, so...
It's like above 50%, actually.
Actually, yes. 56. So, I mean, it's a very beautiful country. And compared to Austria, the landscapes are so... Well,
big. Huge.
First of all, huge.
Everything big, is huge in the US.
And also amazing. Also diverse. I think I had the impression when driving like any road for a couple of miles... The scenery changes from like almost a desert style type of nothingness to like almost hills and wooden or like trees all over the place, basically. A lot of different things to see here. And well, I went to a West Coast trip. My first stop basically started in San Francisco when we started a journey, a typical journey when people visit the West Coast is in San Francisco, visiting the city there and then heading towards the south over to the, visit other cities like LA and San Diego.
Were you a good and well-behaved tourist and visited the Golden Gate Bridge?
Obviously.
Oh, for sure. But have you seen it? I recognize that this should always be very foggy.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, well, we were in San Francisco, I think, for 4 days. 3 of these 4 days, or the first 3 days, were completely clear sky, very sunny, almost perfect weather. And we did other things. So we visited Coit Tower, we visited Alcatraz, we visited the piers, Fisherman's Wharf and whatnot. And on the last day, we decided, okay, let's have a look at, or let's go to see the Golden Gate Bridge. Guess what happened there? It was foggy.
So you didn't see the bridge, but you see the bridge. Mean,
no, it was not that problematic. We did see the bridge, but there was a little bit of mist going on, and it was not the perfect scenery to take our selfies, let's say.
Happens.
But yeah, it was still a very nice experience. Then we headed to LA and visited the Universal Studios. And I am a big fan of this kind of theme parks, actually. I have no idea if you guys have ever been to one of these. But I think, Peter, you might have been to one of these kind of...
Of the German ones, maybe?
No, because you visit the Gardasee all year.
Yeah,
there's
but
the Gardaland.
I'm only at the Gardaland, yeah?
Yeah.
Is it just like a park?
Almost, yeah.
With like roller coasters and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, exactly. That's Universal Studios. But what they also have is they have a studio tour where you kind of have a seat at, let's say, like a trolley or like a mini train, let's see, that is driven by one operator. And then there's one instructor that tells you stuff, what's going on each side, basically. And what you drive through is basically the complete area where a lot of movie and serious sceneries are built. Like yeah. A lot of halls and like if you imagine where you have like a typical city scene, there's like a big wooden, well, house facade built. And on the back, there's basically nothing. It's just the front side where... that they're using for the scenery in a certain movie or series. You just drive through there and it's actually really action-driven because you would think, okay, I'm seeing this house and okay, they're using this for this movie or whatever and nothing is really happening. But then suddenly you drive through kind of a Mexican-themed town, let's say, where there's a little buildings going on there and then the train stops and the instructor says something about this. Okay, this was used for this kind of movie. And then he's kind of over-dramatic, of course, because it's for good effect. And he says something like, oh my God, watch out, people, look to the left. And then a giant flood of water comes, floods the complete street.
Okay, wow.
I don't know how much water they used for this, but this is kind of a show effect that used every time when the train comes by.
Okay.
So the complete scenery is flooded and this is like a really, oh my God, what's going on, this situation. Very impressive. And then later on, we drive through, there's also some kind of like building blocks almost or like halls. Mm-hmm. Where they built sets or sceneries inside buildings and you drive through once there and then suddenly you are at like an underground rail station which they use for filming. And then he tells another thing like this is used for this kind of movie or whatever and then suddenly watch out from the above and then the complete ceiling breaks down.
Oh, okay, wow.
to the left-hand side, then, let's say, a gas tank is falling or because of the simulated earthquake, let's say.
Gravity.
A truck is sliding down this breakthrough and then bursts at a pillar and then there's flames everywhere. And then on the other side, there's like these gates where you put your ticket when you got onto the train and then... the whole staircase is flooded again and it's amazing. Just like these little like you're just seeing the scenery and they're doing this much effort for this. This is very, very impressive. I was really impressed by this. And there you get to see a lot of different like film requisites, and they're using like different cars, like the, how's it called, from the Knight Rider, or the Harry Potter car that flies in the second part of the films, whatever. And it's very a really, really nice experience if you're that kind of a movie fan, actually. One of the Highlands, actually. Yeah, we, besides that, we also visited San Diego, of course. So very nice, like almost Mexican or Spanish kind of influenced city. Went to Grand Canyon, and I had a helicopter drive over the Grand Canyon. This was just a massive experience. And
it's so fucking huge.
It's very huge, yeah. It's several kilometers or miles
wide. I think 30, about 30 miles on the south rim.
Yeah.
And it's just, when you're standing at the rim and looking down on the Colorado River,
yeah,
it just looks like a small creek running through the hills. But the Colorado River is fucking huge, actually.
It tends to be at certain like times of the years, because when we visited in fall, of course, in September, and it almost looked like it is kind of dried out a little bit, because it almost looked like a brownish, like, swamp kind of.
Okay.
And there's a little bit of water flowing. You can see it a little bit, but it's not like a real colorful bluish river that you would expect. I was really surprised by that. I thought, okay, the Colorado River is like a really...
You wanted to have it more color.
Yeah.
Like the Colorado.
It's such a famous river. I thought it was kind of bigger. But this may be just because of the time of the year, or like this area in this was actually in Arizona, yeah, is a typical area where drought is a problem. So they have water shortage, of course. And this might be one of the effects, that this river is slowly but surely drying out, maybe. So we weren't sure about this. But anyway, this was our impression about this. Next, we also... Yeah?
Funny anecdote here. When I went to the Grand Canyon, our bus driver has said something like, the most dangerous animal in the whole Grand Canyon area is the squirrel.
It's the squirrel?
The squirrel, yeah.
Man, there are a lot of them.
Because there are a lot of them, and they come really close, because people are often feeding them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they contact rabies.
Oh, okay.
And so the most people that die from animal attacks there die from squirrels. From squirrel bites and from the rabies there.
I can see that, yeah.
And that was very... how does it is? Very
surprising,
very,
right?
Surprising, yeah. Actually. Because... The gray squirrels are pretty big, and they're so friendly, and they're coming to you with the funny looking cheeks, and all smiling, and then they're just, well, fuck you, this is my nut now.
Yeah,
that's my country here. Yeah.
I can totally see this. Yeah, we witnessed a lot of squirrels, but also chipmunks throughout also during the national parks that we visited. And we thought, okay, but in Austria, typically when you see a squirrel, it is very shy. It is up in the tree quickly. When you go near them, they're just off. But in America, in the national parks, or also in Grand Canyon, they come close to you. They are running over your backpacks and whatever. They're searching for food. And there's also signs everywhere where it says you should not feed them, because they should get their own food, basically. Yeah, so in that sense, it doesn't surprise me at all. But yeah, well, national parks as well that we visited. You visited, Philip, you visited Grand Canyon and Las Vegas, right?
Las Vegas and Grand Canyon, yeah.
We too. We basically arrived at the last city was Las Vegas, and it's completely a different world. It's just amazing how, like, you have basically a desert there. It is and at it the just daytime
suddenly 40 there.
Like over 95 degrees Fahrenheit or 40 degrees Celsius. And they built just a real big city of lots of different casinos, hotels on a big street, several kilometers long. It is just incredible.
It's just so strange.
And the question is now, did you lose or did you win money?
We did not really play at the casinos, the normal strip. There's basically the main strip, basically. There's all the old part, the original part of Las Vegas, which is Fremont Street, where the first casinos have opened prior to the big like breakout when the normal strip. They're a little bit down to earth, let's say, when it comes to entries and minimum bets and something like that. We visited one of these casinos there, and I just took, I don't know, $30. We played a round of blackjack, and of course I lost everything.
The house always wins.
The house always wins, yeah. I mean, it was fun still. When you're playing, you get free drinks.
Yeah.
And you kind of can make up for this when you're just drinking fast and then order next one. But on the other hand, you're required basically the tip, of course. This is actually one of the things that is very unusual in Europe and is quite common in America, of course. When you go to a restaurant or when you receive any kind of service, you tip the people. It is kind of required or like a standard practice actually to do it
because they are really really underpaid workers.
They don't get, most of them don't get paid, they just live from the tips.
That's sometimes, as far as I know, sometimes when wages that are employed at a restaurant, they do get some salaries, but not that much that they could live without the tips. So tipping is of course very important, and it's very unusual for us. And one of the most unusual things is actually when it comes to the check, the receipt after you have eaten or when you finished eating or drinking, whatever, when you're at a restaurant, you receive like kind of this checkbook with the printed receipt. And in America, they don't know what it means that everyone pays for their own kind of food. This is standard practice for us in Austria when we say, okay, we are, we're splitting it.
Yeah.
Let's say, okay, you had your schnitzel, whatever, and Philip had his Schweinsbraten or whatever. I had my vegan, whatever. and I'm paying for what I ate or drank. In America, what they can offer, at first we asked, okay, can we just split the check? Because we were four people. And they said, okay, sure, we can do this. And then, what do we want to split it by? By two, by four, whatever? And I thought, okay, what sense does it make when you split the whole check into four equal pieces? I mean,
not everyone
ate the same thing, and somebody may ate an appetizer and the other one didn't. So this is not actually fair. And this is the only thing they can do. They can only split it in equal parts.
Or
just one check, at least from our experience. And then we just manage it, okay, always one person pays, and then we just keep the check, and then it levels out in the end.
Yeah,
but it's very unusual actually. And yeah,
so you did get the receipt just with the total amount, or did you have all of the things that you ate priced out?
Yeah, just there was a list.
But they can't manually divide this.
No, not really. They have like a sum at the end, and they can divide it by four, let's say, if there are four people.
But that would be basic maths, and that's just a...
Yeah, but
that's just a sheet of paper and a pen.
Yeah, I think, maybe they can. I mean, I'm not saying here they can't do it, but... this is not what they are used to do.
And yeah, that's true.
I mean... we might have been able to ask them, and they would be like, maybe, okay, yeah, let's do it. And they maybe could manage to do it, but
they aren't used to it. It's very unusual. Yeah.
It's unusual. And I think, I thought to myself, when three guys, like maybe us three, will go to a restaurant in America, and they, what's like the cultural habit Is it a common practice to just split it by three? And even if, like, you had a dessert and appetizer again, and then basically I'm paying for your meal to a certain extent, if that's normal.
So basically, if you're from the US and you have an answer to this riddle for us, just write us a DM on Twitter. Yeah. It's @response_legacy, or write us an email in response@gmx.at.
Would be very interesting for me, yeah. But other than that, it was, of course, a very nice experience. Very different. Very friendly people, actually. I immediately was shocked when I returned to Austria how actually rude people are in Austria. Honestly, I just went to a grocery store to get up some basic food because we left for 1 month. And like, people don't care when you are just looking at a certain product and need some space. And if people want to pass by you, they just don't care. They run into you if possible. And in America, when they're like standing in some little way, maybe a bit too much into your way, they are like, "Oh, excuse me, sorry," and I back up a little bit and whatnot. Even if in the crowded and the biggest cities, they're like respectful in that kind of sense. This is very impressive for me. Because we clearly don't have this in Austria.
No, for sure not. We are always grumpy.
We're always grumpy in that sense. I mean, at heart, we're nice people. But you gotta earn your like nice respect towards other. At first, we're kind of skeptical to each other, I think, at first glance. But in America, they're like very open-minded. They speak to each other very fast and clearly and open-minded, and I kind of think this is a nice attitude to have, actually. I enjoyed this very much. So overall.
So did you get to play some magic in America?
Unfortunately, not really. I didn't bring my magic cards, and I didn't really have time for it. I mean, I could squeeze in one or two FNMs probably. But, you know, the trip was fully packed with, like, stations going from A to B. And we drive almost 5,000 kilometers with our rental car. So
about 4,000 miles or 3,500 miles.
Yeah, something like this, yeah.
It should be around three.
Because 1 mile is 1.6
kilometers. 1.6, yeah.
Because 3 miles are 5 kilometers.
Yeah.
3 miles are that's a nice, nice way to do it, yeah.
Yeah. So no magic for this time. I also was really sad because I couldn't. I was in Vegas in 15th to 18th of October, and now at the end of October there's this Magic 30 festival. I just missed this, but yeah.
You had to pay like €300 to just visit it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really expensive.
It's really expensive.
When you are there at the time, I think I would have done it.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah, for sure.
I know it's much, but it's a once in a lifetime experience.
Had you watched some Penn and Teller or something like that?
We did watch a show.
From them?
Not from Penn and Teller.
Okay.
But I'm a big Penn and Teller fan. But since we were four people, we kind of had to decide, okay, what to watch and what not. And we settled on a Cirque du Soleil show.
Okay.
Very nice group of people doing some acrobatic stuff, and we watched the Michael Jackson One show. It's kind of a highlight of Michael Jackson songs packed in kind of an acrobatic show. Very, very nice. And
what I wanted to add here is Vegas is kind of strange because when I was there, was staying at the Luxor, and it was kind of funny to me because everything should look like stone, but it's plastic. And that brings the whole city down to its to the core for me. It's just all shining lights and it's not real.
Yeah, of course.
Everything in Vegas is just not real. And that was just so Well, not even the stone is real. Why should anything here be real?
Yeah, it's definitely true.
Just as the 30th anniversary proxies.
Oh, that was probably the greatest transition ever. But yeah, not really a transition now. But it would be great.
Yeah.
I think this sums up basically my trip very well, and I'm happy to visit it again, actually, but maybe a different kind of
time.
Not the West Coast, but maybe the East Coast.
Maybe we can go to some Chicken Dip Legacy or to some Jeremy 40Ks in Missouri.
Yeah. Oh, is Legacy Pit also in...
Legacy Pit would be in Richmond.
Richmond, yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. In Maryland. But yeah, that would be also very nice to go there.
Yeah.
But we would need a bigger trip for that.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
So...
what happened in Austria in the meantime?
Fucking lot. I probably just started right off the bat. After a long losing streak with various combo decks and even some mid-range decks sprinkled into it. I hate to tell my bad beats here, but I was on a losing streak since I think 3 months and was never really able to go better than 1-3. Besides 1-2-2 with Oopsal spells, which was a highlight, actually. And after the last ban announcement, which we will talk about later, I picked up Blue Red Delver. And I know I'm a fucking winning team joiner. I should shame myself.
You should be much stronger than that, Philip.
But yeah, I was already tempted back in Bologna.
Yeah.
To buy my Murktides and just go Blue Red Delver. And yeah, after this ban announcement, where they said Delver has 9% meta share, I said to myself, well, let's push this a little bit higher and bring down the win rate of Delver in one swing and buy myself some Murktides. And that's what I did. And fuck yeah, this deck brings my lazy ass on his first try to a 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
Only losing against 8-cast. I mean, this was my first time playing Blue Red Delver against 8-cast. I had no idea what I'm doing. Haven't casted a tempo brainstormer, a tempo ponder in my life. And then proceeded to win against Slivers, Burn, and the Mirror.
Hmm.
So, well, Delver's treating me good. I will play this again next week also. Or this week also.
Oh, let's be honest. For the half of a year, it takes somebody out of Delver will be banned.
What now?
Maybe, but I'm saying you will be playing this for the half or maybe complete year until something out of this deck will be banned.
Yeah, I will play this until this deck gets banned and then I will gladly return to my fucking shitty combo piles. Yeah, that's true because they make simply a lot more fun. But yeah, speaking of fun, I had a little bit of fun by diving into pre-modern.
Mm-hmm.
I built my first pre-modern deck. It's red and black zombie spark. It's basically zombie infestation with squee. So you discard your squees to make zombie tokens. And wow, this feels so... not 1999. It feels so 2002, actually, when I started first back in Legions. It's so nostalgic driven that I already bought some new cards again and building my second deck.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The new hot shit.
Oh yeah, so I can only recommend pre-modern for everyone who is just rocking Delver to win, or just rocking Delver to try to win, like myself. In the meantime, pre-modern is definitely the more fun option. What else has happened? That was probably the biggest magic news in my life. Besides one thing, I was a guest on the Stockholm Legacy Report, where we discussed the Austrian metagame and some parts of the ELM. And also my paper play that I had with Mardu, that Gael. So Red Gael, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so much fun with the... Nothing against you guys, but it was so much fun podcasting again and being with the Swedish guys. They are so chill.
Really?
And yeah. If you don't already know them, just check them out. They're on every podcast platform. That's Stockholm Legacy Report. They are great.
Shout out to them.
It was, at first, was a little bit strange because their whole podcast is totally structured.
Mm-hmm.
So not like ours. Ours is extremely improvised all the time.
Don't you remember? I think, was it actually Julian or any other guest that we had?
Julian said ours is so much more structured than theirs.
Yeah. We had the feedback already from other guys that ours is structured. So how structured must the one from Stockholm be?
Yeah, they are really structured because they sent me the show notes where basically everything that Victor has said is already in there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they really played from A to C down there.
Do they like plan it minute by minute?
No, not that far, but the parts that Victor says are already there. And then it's just Christopher says this, and mm-hmm. Robin says this, and Philip says this. And then it's Victor again with the whole thing that he says. And then again, it's... It was amazing. A little bit strange at first, but it felt very professional. So I really liked that, and it was...
We won't implement it.
No, for sure not, because I think it's good for us to have another niche in the podcast market. So we will keep ourselves...
like a free little bird.
Yeah, for sure.
We will have the free speech.
Yeah.
But it's great, and they were so chill and very, very cool company. So definitely check them out. We will put the link to the episode in the show notes, and also check them out on Twitter. It's STHLM Legacy. Yeah, mm-hmm. Probably right here. So Peter, what happened in your life?
Boah. I mean, we talked a lot about private stuff, so we'll make a short run. Then basically university started.
Sorry to interrupt you. Everybody has known that if Dan returns, it will get a part of private stuff here.
No, this for sure. So basically, university started. The last weeks of the summer continued. Had some time to relax. Went skiing this weekend.
Oh,
and
you went skiing?
Yeah, I went skiing at the glacier in Kitzsteinhorn.
Ah, okay,
Austria.
I thought they're already turning on the
snowblowers,
yeah.
I think that's definitely not the name, but
the ship.
It's not snowblow.
It's like snow.
What are they called?
I don't know. Machine.
Magnets. How do they work?
Yeah. Snow machine, most likely.
Beschneidungsanlagen.
It's
don't put an N in there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, this weekend they weren't turned on because like it was like above 0 degrees, so they wouldn't work on there, but like Saturday
it's
was
only working
a lot of,
at negative degrees.
It should be only working at negative degrees,
mm-hmm.
Saturday was pretty horrible. A lot of snow, a little bit too warm, so like the snow directly melts.
Mm.
So it was a little bit wet. But we went to the Finnish, how's it called in English? Sauna?
What is it called?
Basically the warm place.
Sauna.
Where you...
Sauna is actually
it's
normal.
Sauna, yeah.
I think it's sauna,
basically
to
the sauna and relaxed there. That's at nice. The afternoon. And yeah, Sunday was pretty great. And yeah, this was basically small rundown of private life and a short description that we will talk about like afterwards. Like basically, it was like on this Saturday, the 29th of October, we will have an European Legacy Masters qualifier in Vienna, which will be organized by 3for1, which is also a sponsor of the European Legacy Masters.
Shout out to 3for1.
Definitely a shout out. And I will be streaming there, so you can jump most likely onto the Austrian Legacy League channel.
It's twitch.tv/Austrian_legacy.
And watch the qualifier and see which faces will be there in Bologna in like a month from now.
Maybe it will be one of... Well, Philip, you're not playing.
I'm not playing. I can't.
I have one last chance to qualify for this event.
So basically, we can watch Daniel fail to qualify for the European Legacy Masters.
That might be true.
In the final. Hopefully in the finals.
I haven't played Magic in a month, so who knows?
Yeah. But yeah, I would so love for one of us Linzer guys
to win,
yeah, to bring this back home.
We're driving there with 3 cars, so
that like, yeah, we're 11 players or something like that. Yeah,
I think we're 12. With they're 12, I think. Am I right?
No, I'm one of the guys.
You were one of the guys. Oh, okay, yeah.
So Daniel, do you know what you will be playing down there?
Probably Doomsday. There are a lot of different Esper variants going on right now.
Do you want to play Doom Kitten?
No.
Why?
Because
I don't like the list because Marcus, I like a Chromox in there.
Marcus Ewald said the kitten wasn't good.
Kitten is not really good. I think I'm into the new hottest shit. Basically, which is Shield Dread.
And you bought already?
Yeah, Shield Dread? I have. I'm going to buy at two Friday of two of them. Yes. I'm
like, how much are they?
I don't know, Euros? But I honestly, I don't care at this point. I need them.
Yeah, that's true.
They are.
Yeah, and I want to have a good Delver matchup. For this reason, I want to have the White Splash. I want the complete sideboard for this reason. So, Esper it is, and probably a Shield Dread build.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my
very good idea.
A lot of removal with Shield Dreads in the back end.
In the main deck, I will be playing the Shield Dreads, and the removals will be only in the sideboard.
Okay, so main deck, 2 Shield Dreads.
Yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
Very nice.
Yeah. Cool, cool.
That's the idea, at least.
Yeah, so tune in into Peter's streaming.
I think, when does the tournament start? At 11 o'clock, I think?
I think 11, yeah.
So the stream will start at 11 o'clock,
yeah.
Basically like the whole day. And I will try to get some pizza in the meantime. Like that.
This might be a good idea, yeah.
Because it will be an exhausting day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure it will.
Because, like, basically in the later stages, I'm mostly used to recast. So basically take the recorded footage of a tournament and then talk together with a guest over the event. And now I have to do it on my own.
Oh, but I can turn in if you want to at some point.
At 02, you will drop the tournament and
yeah, sure.
In?
And in between, I can help you or whatever because I'm losing basically very fast.
Okay.
You win very fast and you lose very fast.
Or
so.
I win very fast or I will lose very fast. Yeah.
Okay. Seems pretty good.
Yeah.
So maybe we can get some of the 3for1 guys onto the...
True.
Onto the stream to talk about something.
Yeah, the little interview would be nice.
But something happened in the meantime where you were gone from existence.
Mm-hmm. True.
Basically in America.
So basically nothing happened?
I mean, there was hope in the sky.
There was crashes.
And there was hope. A potential ban announcement for Legacy. And it was a ban announcement for Magic the Gathering. And Delver has 9% meta share. It has a win percentage of like 51 or 52%. And it doesn't impact the meta enough to be banned.
It is fine.
So do we want to talk about this?
Yeah, or do we want shit, to this bullshit. This is so much bullshit. I listened to all of the other podcasts. And everybody is dancing around this whole ban announcement, and nobody's really talking about anything. And I'm just like, well, then maybe we should do it. Okay, and so we will. This 9% meta share is bullshit. Even if they are having leaked data or something. And on the one hand, they're just banning for the challenges and everything. On the other hand, they are taking leaked data, which is just noise, after 6 months or 9 months of Delver oppression. Everybody's playing everything else than Delver in leagues,
mm-hmm.
because it's just not enough fun to play Delver in leagues,
yeah.
on MTGO. I mean, I play now Delver because I want to win, and it works, like I said.
Yeah.
I mean, I will surely go 2-2 or 1-3 with Delver also, because I'm not the most skilled player at the moment, and I don't have enough time to really get the reps in. But the power level of the deck is absurd. It's simply there. And everybody and WotC still are closing their eyes, and it's just
frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Definitely. Even if I'm playing it myself right now, and I'm enjoying it. I hate myself for it. I also said on Twitter to Nick B, he posted some kind of a phrase that I should put on everything Delver related. Every time when I win something, that I should put it into it. And I put it in, and it basically says something like, I know that I sold my soul for playing this deck, and I will play it until something gets banned out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it's gonna get banned because it's like too broken, something like that, yeah.
For sure. And it just, it feels so absurd.
I mean, this is one of the perfect examples why Dead's Wizards is very hesitant about legacy changes in general. I think this has been also the case in the past. I mean, there have been very, very fast bannings, which were very surprising.
Breach,
exactly.
I had my
lines
and diamonds on this day at home.
Yeah.
After a month of playing.
Well, the LED buyings was not at all a mistake.
It wasn't a mistake.
Yeah.
It hurt nevertheless.
But overall, Legacy is a very dragged out format for WotC, and they're not doing like quick changes. Also, admittedly said, at this point, it is a very long time already since we have this kind of situation with Delver. But since I'm not I played Legacy almost a couple of years now, but I entered Legacy at the countertop area. Countertop was a top tech in Legacy, obviously, for a long period of time as well, right? Maybe you guys have the idea how long actually was countertop at the best deck of Legacy.
2 to 3 years.
2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And this is actually longer than now we have with this Delver situation,
but,
right?
But it never... I mean, I can only talk for myself. Mm-hmm. I played Death in Texas back in the day.
Yeah.
And it always felt great, actually. The format felt fun.
Okay.
All the time.
So it's about the feeling.
It's definitely about the feeling. And that... I also see Legacy more as a competitive / casual format. It's both kinds mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
So the feel is definitely an important factor here.
Mm-hmm.
So if something just feels off, then maybe it shouldn't be here. That's the same for Deathrite Shaman.
Mm-hmm.
I think Deathrite Shaman was the right power level for Legacy, because it was fun and engaging and had really great made great gameplay.
Yeah.
But it put it made the format less diverse.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's, in my opinion, the same problem that we have with Delva now. Top, on the other hand, didn't make the field less diverse. There were a lot of strategies which were all not that good, but they were at least a little bit better. How do I say this? They weren't better than top, but they were viable.
Okay, yeah.
And now everything is just like, it automatically folds to Delva. Or to in my opinion, to Merktide region.
Okay.
So you can't play your... And that's nostalgia part kicking in. You can't play your pet decks anymore. And that's what in my opinion, is one of the crucial parts for Legacy to survive, is to keep that spirit of nostalgia alive.
So that all these standard decks that have been a substantial part of Legacy for a long period of time, like, I don't know, Sneaker Show, Death in Texas, Storm, all these kind of decks should be playable to some
extent. I mean, Death in Texas is one of the more better decks at the moment, but it's fine, in a tweet, I'm not sure who tweeted it, but they said that it was Delva that's playable, 4-color control, Moon Stompy, Death in Texas, Doomsday, and
that's it.
Nia Depths, and basically that's it. And that's just not diverse enough.
Painter is a very, very good.
And that's just not diverse enough for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Back then we had more decks and it was simply more diverse. Probably the big feeling there is that Delva is just one flavor now. And I think if we can do something to make Delva branch out into other colors again, that it will feel more like traditional Legacy. I have no problem, really no problem, with Delva being the best deck. It's great to have a tempo deck being the best deck all the time, because it keeps the format stable and it keeps the format fun. But I don't like it being just
over the top.
No, not even over the top, but just one flavor. I need my Grixis Delva, I need my Rug Delva, even Buck Delva.
Okay.
If, or let me phrase it in a different way, if there's 25% blue-red Delva, that feels totally different than if you're having 25% Delva, which itself consists 10% Rug, some percent Grixis, some percent blue-red, some percent Bug. That feels totally different because every match plays out totally differently.
So, but what I'm reading between the lines here is kind of, when you say, okay, it would be better to have like diverse versions of Delva, that implies like for a given meta game, maybe I want the black splash now because I need discard for combo, or maybe I need the green splash for Tamago for the mirror, or kind of this kind of flavor or hatches for a given meta game that changes constantly week after week. So it's kind of the stifle that is sometimes good and then afterwards bad situation. So you think this kind of a wheel that spins around would be a better situation for Legacy to have compared to, like, there is clearly this best version in every meta game, because the meta game obviously shifts from week to week, from tournament to tournament. Maybe some people will bring a new kind of flavor or deck into the mix, and then certain decks will have to adjust, but Delva can't just be the same all the time. So this is the main criticism that you have here.
Basically, that's my stance on this.
I think this is I could agree with that. Yeah, if we have kind of a wheel that has to spin, and maybe at week A we have Grixis, Delver or whatever being the best deck because there's a lot of combo variants and whatever. And then next week it is not the best deck anymore because the people are reacting to the decks that are brought to tournaments the week before. So it kind of has to change all the time, which is kind of fresh, refreshing in some kind of way.
Yeah, that's just not happening now.
It's not happening yet.
True. And that's my biggest gripe at the moment with all the Delver talk. It's not really about the power level. It's about Delver not changing, actually.
I agree with this, yeah.
Yeah.
Can I agree with this?
Okay. That's not good podcasting here because we just agree. But yeah. Well, maybe we aren't that wrong then.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see Delver branching out in different colors. It makes the mana a lot more unstable. The problem nowadays is, like, you have the big beta Murktide, you have the good acceleration for Graven detection in the form of DSC, that is also, like, the better beta nowadays. You have the late game in Day's Expressive Iteration, which also doesn't force you branching out in different colors.
True.
So, like, there is no need to splash for, like, the 40s or something like that. Mm. Because you basically have everything.
You find the counters.
Yeah, you find the counter spells. You have the late game.
You have
insurance. You have the grind. Yeah. You have the early game in, like, 8 one-drops. So there is nothing that you have to deal with that you can't deal. You have the one-off Bratzenboro, as we say in Linz. The Brazen Boro, like, he can deal with basically any permanent on the battlefield as long as you don't control it. So, yeah, nice fact that there was a big misplay once in our community.
Don't bring this up.
But it's like really, really interesting what's going to happen with the deck. I mean, I'm okay with being Delver the best deck and I can build decks and can beat it, but the problem is, like, they change to cyber cards and then I'm nowhere near beating them. So.
That's true. And also the extreme clock of Murktide region
Murktide is so okay in my opinion. If you can get rid of Dragon Rage Channeler, the problem is, like, Dragon Rage Channeler providing, like, 3 cards in the graveyard. Not 3 cards, but 3, the number 3 cards in the graveyard for Murktide accelerated so fucking much.
Yeah. That's actually two kinds of the same coin. In my opinion,
They are a pair. They're a pair of dice.
It's hard to do the right call here because, like you said, I think Murktide Region is too strong because it comes too soon and it hits too hard. You said DRC is the problem because it enables sooner Murktides.
Mm-hmm.
Or fast Murktides, yeah. And they're basically the same side of the coin.
And no, they're different sides of the same coin.
Different sides of the same coin. Yeah, that's true. The gin and tonic is kicking in, finally. And I don't know how to address it. Something has to go to address this. To gather some data or something.
True. I mean, they have the data. They have the data of 9% Delver.
and don't forget our overlords, Leyline Binding.
But I think if we branch completely out in this episode,
no,
we will stand by. We think the combination of Dragon Rage Channel and Murktide Region is a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
In our opinion, we think Leyland Binding in the form of 4-color mono blue Delver is the solution to the format. Yeah. And I think with this stance, we can end the episode.
I think so too. I would agree. We have a lot more to talk about.
The next episode.
The next episode.
And we're going to hint it's a 0.5 because it will basically uploaded at the same time.
So we will record the next episode right here, right now. If you like what we are doing, consider following us on Twitter. It's @response_legacy. Also, you can find us on Facebook and or Instagram. Also, you can write us always an email. It's in-response@gmx.at. You can find me on Twitter. It's @finnickmtg, PHINIKMTG. Peter, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me not on Instagram, but you can find me on Twitter. It's @unicornlord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. Where can we find you, Daniel?
You can find me everywhere @flyingdever. No, just on Twitter, actually.
With that, in response,
to be continued.
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.